when we went to drama school, it was like, you're not allowed to be gay, don't tell anyone you are. If you do, then
you won't get jobs.
Yeah. And so I was kind of like masking loads of things in my 20s.
I just remember storming into the room, storming with passion. It was like an afternoon in April where, you know, can't go out and do anything. It's like, right, we're going to have a baby.
Whenever I see someone have success, I'm always like the biggest cheerleader, because I'm like, that is amazing, because you're just showing me that that's possible for me too, if that's something that I wanted to do.
Like one of the myths is, from what I've learned from Sam, is like, they don't want to keep the baby. Just because they're carrying the baby, they don't want the baby. They're there to do it for someone else. That's in their intention from day dot.
So she said it and I was just like, this could work really well. And of course,
were you in a hot tub at the time?
We were.
Hi, I'm Sanjay Sudsmith, pronouns he, him, and welcome to the Proud Parent Club, the inclusive LGBTQ+ parenting community. And today I'm super excited to be joined by Stuart and Francis Armfield Haugen, dads to Rio through surrogacy, which spans both the UK and the US, but we'll get to that in a little bit, who have shared their journey to and through parenthood across their YouTube and TikTok channels at Stuart and Francis. Hi, boys.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, thanks for joining me. How are you both?
We're just so good. This last year, I feel like, has been the best. Well, it's been the best year of my life. I can't speak for Stuart. How do you feel?
Of course, it's been so good. We're great.
We're so good. And we were just chatting before we got on to say, like, our child is near, Rio's nearly one, and just how quickly the year has gone. Crazy.
I know. It's mad. And he's down for a nap at the moment, is he?
Yep. He's a good sleeper.
Francis is training. He's been like aggressive sleep training.
Yeah, 6 months. I wasn't blessed. Well, we weren't blessed with a baby that slept through the night from day dot. So at 6 months, we just did a boot camp.
Yeah. And Francis, I think you're like the me in your relationship. You're the one who's a bit more like research things to the absolute max and kind of find all the different like tips and tricks.
Yeah, definitely. Well, actually, all I need is one person to guide me, and then I just become obsessed. I'm just obsessive. I become obsessed with something, and you have to make it work. You need to be obsessed and consistent. Actually, consistent is a better word. So I was just consistent, and now he sleeps the night. And now I just want to tell every parent.
I know he's so we could do the whole podcast about how passionate he is about getting children to sleep.
Well, yeah, almost as passionate about sourcing breast milk. There's lots of I'm sure there'll be lots of passions we get to, and let's start at the beginning though. Talk to me about how you guys met.
Right, so we've actually been together in January, it'll be 13 years, so a really long time. Both Stuart and I studied musical theatre in London Drama School at different times though, so we weren't there at the same time. And we both were like musical theatre boys with that dream of being on the stage, which is we both did, which is amazing. And actually, it was my first professional job. I was working with some people, and there were two people who kept talking about this person called Stuart, and they were like, "Oh yes, Stuart's so fun." I just remember, like, I can remember exactly where I was listening to them talking about this fun guy, Stuart. And then my flatmate at the time also knew Stuart. So I had all these kind of random connections. So anyway, it led to this moment in a life where we were in a restaurant called Balans. I don't know, anyone listening is like this really good restaurant. It was actually in
the
Chiswick.
Soho one.
It was one in Chiswick.
Oh.
Chiswick Balans, such a great
it's
place.
Now.
So sad. But anyway, we in Balans, and it was a leaving drinks for my friend. And I saw Stuart across the end of the table. I had to go up to him, and I literally just said to him, "I feel like you're famous. I've heard so much about you," which I didn't realise. I was just being genuine, but he thought...
I loved it. Yeah. What a line. But then, this is the really interesting thing, is that then Francis like just kind of didn't pursue it. And for the first time ever, I did the chasing. I was the one that was constantly like, messaging saying, "Do you want to go here? Do you want to do this?"
It was all through lack of confidence. So basically, I really liked him, but for some reason, I didn't think he'd like me. So, and there were signs there. I ignored Facebook messages. I don't know even how that happened.
How dare you?
Anyway, it just led to this moment in our life where I was in a show in the West End and I had two tickets.
Was it Legally Blonde?
Yes. Yeah, I was in Legally
Blonde. I know.
Love that show.
Yeah, it was my favorite
show. I saw it. And I'd known that was you up there. But I was really annoyed actually because Doug got us tickets and It was on a Monday, and it was on Sheridan's day off. I was fuming.
She was so good.
Yeah, she was
amazing.
She was remarkable. Anyway, so I was doing the opening night of the show. I had two tickets. One of them was my flatmate who knew Stuart, and I met him a few months earlier, and I promised him an open night ticket, and I didn't really mean it. But then something happened where my friend kind of dropped out. So I went, I can fulfill this promise that I wasn't going to make. And I invited him along, and then
we went on a date, and then the rest is history.
The one thing about what Stuart was, which I loved about him, was like, he was so like, as soon as it was like, yeah, let's go on a date, he would ring me. He would like, it was really forward.
Assertive.
Like, really assertive. And it wasn't like this kind of texting kind of, it was like, hi, when should we meet? And I love that about
you. Yeah. I'm like that in life though. When I want to.
I was gonna ask you about that actually. So have you always I'm asking this earlier than I planned, but have you always been like that? Because one of the things that I find, I guess, like I'm almost envious of is like your ability to be so unapologetically you and yourself. And I think that's something you talk about a lot on your social media, how you very much you're who you are, and you're going to live your life how you're going to live it, and you're not afraid to just go after what you want. And is that how you've always been?
Yeah, it is actually. He's you could probably answer it better.
Yeah, we're like two different kind of. I feel like he's rubbed off on me because I feel like as a person, maybe more like you. I still care. Kind of, we all care a little bit what people think about us, but that really held me back. I was always very driven and very, very persistent and hardworking. But in terms of being myself and expressing myself, I don't think I was like that. But Stuart, what I loved about him, he didn't care as much. He wanted people to talk about him.
Yeah, I would prefer someone to talk about me negatively than not know who I am. Like that, for me, for someone to not know who I am, not have an opinion about me, not speak about me, then, you know, I prefer someone to know me.
But in the 13 years that I've known him, especially as he's kind of, he also built his own business, what I've noticed about him is that kind of like want for like success became much more grounded in his own truth than it was kind of, rather than when he was younger, when we first met, it was like, but I feel like you like really own your own self in a different way.
Yeah, I'm just very confident with who I am right now. And I think in my 20s, I was, you know, a young gay boy that was unsure. And in our musical theatre world, the world has changed so much since we went to drama school. Mm-hmm. But when we went to drama school, it was like, you're not allowed to be gay. Don't tell anyone you are. If you do, then you won't get jobs. Yeah. And so I was kind of like masking loads of things in my 20s. And it wasn't until I got to my 30s where I felt a little bit more established. And actually, do you know what? This is my truth. This is who I am. I've got an amazing life. And I feel like also one of the things that I'm super grateful for is that we've had this really strong relationship that's always felt really great mm-hmm. to lean back on. And whenever I was like pushing myself in other areas of my life, I always knew that I had a sturdy base at home with the two of us, that we were like in it together always. And that I feel like has really helped me kind of like channel my strength and to be more confident with who I am and what I have to offer.
Yeah, and as you get to know me and Stuart, you'll realize that we're so different personalities, like so different. The way we think is completely different, but we love the same things, and I think that's why we really work. And I second what Stuart says, like we've been a unit since day one. Like I remember Stuart, he got into kind of reading the personal development books and opening his mind up as he was like starting on his entrepreneurial journey. And he didn't want me to get left behind. I wasn't in that place, but he said, let's just read the same book. So we've always just done that as a couple, is just kind of grown together essentially. And especially this last year, becoming parents, I think that's been the ultimate growth. Great.
Amazing.
Year.
And was that something that you always thought about, having kids, or when did you start talking about that?
You know what? I don't think we did. I feel like in the last 4 years, maybe. But prior to that, I didn't really think about having
children. It's so funny. So when the first kind of like first time we had a glimpse is I was on holiday with a group of friends. And one of my friends said to me, oh, do you want to have a baby? And it was just like a fleeting comment. And I was like, yeah, maybe. Like, yeah, I would love to have a baby, but it wasn't like something that I was thinking in that moment. Then one of her friends emailed me and said, I've been a surrogate in America and I'm looking to do a second cycle. would you be interested in using me? I'd want to go through an agency. So that, would you be interested? And I was like, well, I'd like to discuss it, but I don't know if I'm ready for it right now.
Yeah.
Then that meant that like 4 years before we had Rio, we actually had a meeting with an agency over in America to discuss surrogacy. And that's when it first, well, first of all, I was like, the cost of it in America scared life out of me. And that was one of the biggest things, like, okay, really want this, I have got to do some aggressive saving.
Because I feel like it became one of those things which we'll do it. We'll do it one day. Yeah. Kind of, we're not going to commit to anything like that. And it was really the pandemic that changed everything. So we were due to get married in the July, then the pandemic happened in the March. A couple of weeks in, we realized, actually, okay, this thing is really serious. Because I thought, of course we're going to be free and be able to get married by July. Then we realized, no, okay, that's not going to be possible. And then Stuart's kind of the vision. He always casts the vision within our relationship. And then I kind of figure out how we're going to do it and make it happen.
I remember that is exactly the same as me and Doug. we say that he's creative director, I'm managing director.
Yeah. It's got 100%. It's so true. Like, even in our socials, for some reasons, like, right, we need to do vlogs. So I go away, right, here's the vlog, and I present him the vlog. He kind of looks to him. Great poster. But I just remember him storming into the room, storming with passion. It was like an afternoon in April where, you know, we can't go out and do anything. It's like, right, we're going to have a baby. Okay. So, you know, we'd saved a lot of money for our wedding. It was going to be a great wedding, but we just decided, you know, what we're waiting for. We can have a great party any day, well, not any day, but any year. Let's put all our money into starting a family.
But it actually stemmed from a conversation I had with one of my best friends, and she just basically said, like, she was so kind. She said, if you fall short of the money or whatever, I've got you. Like, you just need to make this happen. Start the process now, because it could take 2, 3, 4 years. You don't know how long it's going to take. So start now.
From that moment,
it was quick.
It was a year and a half, and Rhea was born, so it was relatively quite quick, and in a time where the world felt like nothing was going to be possible. And, you know, trying to work with, because we're going to do the whole process in the USA. So working with the pandemic, but we made it happen. You know, it was, I'm glad I'm glad you started that train.
We did it together, honey.
and you started that in the USA. And so kind of you kicked off your journey in the USA. You got to the point of like creating embryos in the USA. And then like did you find a surrogate in the USA?
Yeah, we did actually.
I felt bad for her. Because we had to let her down. Because what happened was that we had everything in place. We had the egg donor in place. We had the surrogate in place. And then the egg donor let us down. And so we were back to the drawing board with the egg donor. And so I talked about that to one of my friends. And previously, like a couple of years beforehand, she said, I will be your surrogate. But it was one of those kind of like, of course you will. We've got a lot of girlfriends and they all were like, I'll be your egg donor, I'll be your surrogate.
So actually when even though she wasn't the egg donor, but our egg donor had dropped out, she felt like this was need to.
She just said, I'll be your surrogate. And I mean that. And I was like, oh. And then as soon as she said that, I could not stop thinking about it, because I was just like, in terms of, obviously you've experienced it in America, but
this is Sam you're talking about.
Yeah, this is our first surrogate, Sam. And just being like, with the pandemic in mind, just being able to have her in the UK and know that I could get there for the birth and all those kind of things. I think that was playing all of our minds in that time of, can we travel? I don't want my baby to be born and me not be there and all that kind of stuff. And so she said it and I was just like, this could work really well. And of course,
were you in a hot tub at the time?
We were.
I wasn't present. So he was in a hot tub somewhere else. And then he called me the next day and I was like,
she was really drunk as well.
Yeah. I was like, yes, of course. Yeah. We'll chat tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll
whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
But it just started the thing. And then, we just started to explore it, but it was kind of what we've done in terms of what the doctors call in America a hybrid system, using the USA and the UK, is kind of actually rare. People don't tend to do a mixture of the both. The reason we started the process in the USA, and I'm sure maybe you did the same, is We love the safeness of it and also the transparency of being able to choose our egg donor and speak to our egg donor and then...
Know and see her.
That was really important to us. Yeah. But then our friend offered, and it was the perfect thing for us because then she could be here, we could have the baby through the NHS. So there was loads of benefits. But there was also some risk as well, because in the UK right now, the law is that when the baby is born, the surrogate is...
Her surrogate and her husband.
Even though there's no genetic connection, they are the parents.
There was
risk, so there had to be trust. But we'd known Sam for 5 or 6 years, and it just felt...
It did feel scary, though.
Yeah.
Because of that law, we did feel like she could change her mind at any time. But the more you kind of like go down the process, you realize this girl is not going to change her mind. She is definitely doing this out of the goodness of her heart for us.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of like, oh my God, what if? And everybody asks you that question as well. What if she changed her mind? It's like a big like topic in the UK.
Yeah. And all the dramas that you see on TV, they're all about like that scenario. And I think I definitely kind of resonate with that, because when we were going through our process, even though we did have that security in the US of the legal system being a bit clearer in terms of how things are dealt with in the US, actually, as we got through the process and had built our relationship with Amber, we just knew that even if we didn't have that legal security blanket, it wasn't going to be an issue. And there was no worries from our side on that part.
Yeah, and that's why I feel so much more confident going with our second surrogate, in that that does not bother me at all anymore. And the cases of a surrogate keeping it is like, so ridiculously
like one
low.
Or two in like hundred. I don't know if there's been hundreds of thousands, but it's like the statistic is like 0.something%. You know, it's
obviously in the UK that is the narrative of like this surrogate's going to keep your baby, and I just don't think that is actually the truth of.
But it also is like changing, and that's kind of why we wanted to have our platform online for so many different reasons, but also dispelling these myths. Like one of the myths is from what I've learned from Sam is like, they don't want to keep the baby just because they're carrying the baby. They don't want the baby. They're there to do it for someone else. That's in their intention from day dot.
And then when you got to, I guess, the point of implanting embryos, and I kind of, you revealed something after the fact that you didn't at the time.
Yeah, so we put two embryos in one of each of ours. And I think it's actually the perfect thing, because otherwise we'd have had to choose, okay, who's going to go first? And we just was like, right, let's just put two in, one of each. Yeah. And so actually our gender reveal was to say, we in that moment when the cannons went off, we then knew who the biological dad was.
And that's something we never personally talk about online, but it was a significant moment for us, because we were, you know, we had no idea. And because in the US you're allowed to, you know, have gender selection of your embryos, or what's it called, the proper science name,
I don't know
you might PGS know. Screening
something like that. It was an important moment for us. And what we're going to do for baby number two is whoever is not the biological dad of this of Rio, the other dad is going to do the next process. And
amazing.
We have a very balanced, happy family.
Fingers crossed.
How was that emotionally then? Like, what did it matter in the moment? Like when you kind of found out that news?
I feel like it didn't, especially since he's been here, it really doesn't matter. But I suppose for either person, maybe there might have been some sense of, I don't think
it affected you more.
Yeah.
Francis actually, when we, can you talk about that story?
Yeah, I can talk about that story.
Francis actually, when we were in the scan, the 6 week scan, and we only saw one embryo, Francis actually passed out because he was just so like, what if it's mine and it's not yours? And I was like, Francis, this is nature. You can't control nature. And actually, I never had that feeling whatsoever, because I always knew we'd both have one each, whether it's two together or one at a time. So I never really had that kind of feeling of like, oh, fear of that. But I feel like you were much more...
Yeah, I was emotionally attached to that process, and passing out something I do out of a lot of emotion. I've done it since a child. but it was just, I was more nervous in that point than being there at the birth, which is very strange because that's a lot more intense. But emotionally, I was holding on to something around that. But the more, like, you know, we've gone through the process and it doesn't matter. Like, even if we weren't genetically linked to our baby, it doesn't.
Yeah. Like, and I think more and more as Rio's getting older and older and we're seeing the love that he has for us.
Yeah.
It's just freaking amazing. Like, it is so nice to have, obviously the first 6 months you get no response whatsoever and you're just hoping that they're going to like, whereas I really feel like today, like Francis is working out and me and Rio are waving to him. And I could just see the love in his eyes that he has for Francis, and I know vice versa. And I'm just like, it just makes me so happy that I just know Rio's going to grow up in such a like a wholesome environment and feel super secure as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even though I know in my heart that the one question or one challenge we get as gay dads is, oh, you know, a child needs a mother, like, and that sometimes does play on my mind still sometimes. And I know in my heart that he doesn't need a mother, but sometimes it just plays on my mind sometimes. And I just know from watching him and the way he's with us that he doesn't care. He just wants love. But that is one of the reasons that maybe I did hold off from thinking about having a family when I was younger, because I had such a connection to my mum and I couldn't imagine growing up without that connection to my mum. But what I've come to realize is I did have a connection with the mum because of gender. I had a connection because she was an incredible nurturing maternal person, which is something that we all have. And I really hope by also sharing our story online that dads, whether they're in a gay dad relationship or a heterosexual relationship, they know that they can be, you know, they don't have to do what society has said before, you know, the dad is kind of less involved with the parenting process. That is just learnt. Like, we all are maternal and paternal and have all different skill sets. And I really hope as gay dads, we can show more men out there that they can be that role, and it doesn't have to fall on the woman so much. And actually we were on a cruise recently with a friend of ours who's heterosexual, and she was like, I love watching how you both share your parenting, because, you know, I can now go to my husband, like, I'll have a baby because I don't have to feel like, because I'm the woman, I have to do everything, which I think is really refreshing.
And on that note, I was going to ask you, do you have, like, is there a clear division of roles between you, or do each of you have different things that you do, or is it all very mixed?
I'm just very, like, bold.
Yeah, he's so strong and I just haven't got the energy. I'm just like, you do you, hun. So when it comes to food, when it comes to sleep, when it comes to all these things, he's just like a bulldozer, aggressive attack. You are. So I just let him crack on with that. And also, he loves it. He absolutely loves it. So Francis does all of that kind of stuff. And
the day-to-day, kind of like a relationship, like, you know, he's the managing director, and I'm the creative director, whatever you want to call it. But I'm good at those more day-to-day things. And I feel like as baby two, number two, will come along, I'm not going to have time to do that for both. Yeah. So Stuart's going to really come into himself when Rio's a little bit older.
The thing is, when I look after Rio and I do it my way, everything's always perfect as well. But he's just strong in his opinion.
So. You do come to my back and call sometimes. I'm like, right, help me.
Yeah, because also when Francis comes in, I'm like, oh, Jake. I'm absolutely exhausted.
I think we have something similar. I guess because I'm working and Doug's not back at work yet, so he's with Aria more day to day, but then I always do bath time with her, and that's our little thing. And then, you know, on the weekend I'll get up with her and kind of spend some time so he can have a bit of a nap.
how have you found being working, and how was that process of going back to work? Was that hard?
It was hard, and it's I'm still managing through it. I think but what I do is have to just set very clear boundaries. So basically some days I work from home, which is really great because I get to spend more time with Ara in the morning. But then if I'm on a day where I'm in the office, I set a clear boundary that unless there is a specific reason that I need to be in that office past 5:30, I'm leaving and I go and I get home for 6:15 and I've got 45 minutes where I can do Aria's bath time and then give her a bottle and put her to bed. And then if I need to carry on working, I can carry on working. But I just have to kind of set those very clear kind of boundaries to kind of make sure that I get to spend that time with her sort of during the week. So it's definitely it's taking some getting used to, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. What's been your biggest joy of being parents so far?
I just love the purpose of it. Like it's such a purpose, and I'm such a doer. I like to be busy, and like there's always something to get up for, you know, like he's like there ready for me. Like I just love the purpose, and I love helping and helping him grow and seeing develop, and kind of what Stu was saying before as well, like right now him giving and showing that love back is the most rewarding thing ever, because when they're babies, obviously they literally like just feed me and put me to sleep, and seeing the love that he has for me and for us is nothing beats that.
I think one of my biggest joys is actually like the unit that me and Francis had before Rio has just got stronger and stronger and stronger. And I really feel like before we actually had Rio, I was always like the, I suppose, a higher earner. So I was always the driver. But as I feel like now our kind of life is much more like we're in this together, and we're like much more balanced, and it just feels so much nicer like working as a team with...
Yeah. And it comes with its challenges, because obviously, you know, I think talking about the opposite side of that, what is the hardest thing? The hardest thing is let go.
Trust you to do that. Francis loves
it. It's fine. That was my next question anyway, so you've done it for me, so that's all good.
I need to ask it, so. The hardest thing is letting go of your previous life and letting go of the things that you would always do. So some of the things that I value, which I've maintained to my credit, like, going to the gym. I just had to let go of, like, if I don't manage to do it that day because the situation doesn't allow it, that is fine. You know, he comes first, his wellness comes first. Letting go of having, you know, for Stuart's maybe letting go, like, I just need an hour of free time. I'm like, honey, parenting doesn't stop. Crack on.
I actually haven't found it though, because that's one of my fears, is that my whole world's going to change and it's going to be really hard. And I actually haven't found that. I've actually, because I feel like we've been in a very fortunate position where we're both at home, I really feel like life has grown and evolved rather than like changed, and it's a negative thing. Like I've actually really, really enjoyed this past year, and yes, it's been hard, yes, I've been tired, yes, I've liked to have an hour by myself, but the overall thing, actually, the fear of my whole life changing is actually the smallest thing in my existence. Like, it's, you know, as human beings, we all evolve, we all grow, and we're constantly craving growth. And I feel like this year we've grown as a couple and grown more than ever. And Rio has taught us so much.
Yeah. And when I talk about the challenges, it really is like a minuscule thing. And I think, you know, you hear a lot of parents complain about parenting and how hard it is. And, you know, we all have our own experiences of life, but we kind of made that conscious decision as well when we were going through this process. Like, we can't have a baby just like that. So let's not moan about those hard times. Let's try and change our perspective. So
when Rio's up at night, we call it a midnight rave.
Like a midnight rave. And luckily right now, he doesn't do that so much anymore. But there are times. Because
midnight raves were getting too much.
There are times, you know, when he's unwell, like, you know, you have to, you're like, you're just getting used to a routine, or a development change happens and you're like, everything's changing. So, but we're going to look back at this time in years to come and go, oh my God, remember when we couldn't walk? And you know, it's just like, don't wish it to go faster, just live in the moment.
And that kind of approach you've just talked about, I wanted to ask you about as well, because one of the things you talk about quite a lot, and I think is one of your sort of affirmations that you use, is everything always works out for us. And I think when I first heard you say that on face value, I think it sounds like it means something quite different to what it actually means, because it almost means like, oh, everything's perfect for us. But that, I don't think that's quite what it means.
No, everything is definitely not always perfect.
No.
I would love it to be, but it's just the way you look at everything in life. Like whatever happens to us, like we went through 3 egg donors before we found our actual egg donor. And although at the time we were like, oh, it's a bit frustrating, shit, yeah. It's a bit shit. But also, I just trust the process that wasn't the right one for us. And let's find the right person that is the right person for us. And we do have a connection with, and it feels great. And so, yes, everything works out for us. Like, it could come across a bit arrogant as well, maybe, but actually it's not that at all. No. It's literally just the fact that we just trust that everything, like the universe has our back, and we're just going down, flowing downstream as much as possible and just...
And when, you know, we've all had those life situations where when you look back, so something bad happens to you, and then a few months later, you go, oh my goodness, I'm so grateful that happened because of this happened and this happened. But in the moment, you're like, you can't see that. So what we've learned is when those moments happen, and they happen all the time, we are just able to go, there is a reason for this, rather than sit in this frustration and anger for too long or whatever. Let's just go, okay, this is the way it's meant to be, and kind of accept the situation and just focus on moving forward. So I feel like maybe that's what it is, and just expect also an expectation of good things happening. I think it's just a positive outlook, really. And I think we live in a world where I find a lot of people are kind of, I call arguing for their limitations. They're complaining about the things that are wrong. And that has a place. I think it's important to you know, if you're frustrated, to own that frustration. You don't want to avoid that feeling. But there comes a point where you have to go, well, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to focus on? Because staying in this place doesn't feel good. So I feel that, yeah, that's our philosophy for life.
It's a bit of like a spin, a bit like a positive spin, like everything happens for a reason almost.
Yeah. But I feel like sometimes also in the pandemic, there was a lot of frustration going on. And I had, you know, we were like, we're so positive. And actually there was a time I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, there was a bit of a positive.
What I call toxic positivity, where you can't just layer a level of positivity on a situation. You know, there's all sorts of things going on in the world right now. And there is a place for going, it is a bit shit. This is really hard. And if you don't own those things, then you suppress, you know, if you just cover it with positivity, you're just suppressing it. But it isn't just staying there. I think a lot of people tend to, I've been there, like stay in that place. And it's, when, you know, if you relate this to having kids or going through being gay parents or going through the process, there is a lot that is out of your control, and you just have to, you just have to kind of let go of things. And we learned that during the process. Like, we, you know, Stuart is the ultimate, he wanted to micromanage every part of the process, and it's just not possible when it comes to nature and people.
Yeah. They can control a lot of it, but there's certain things that you just can't plan for.
Yeah, and I felt like I did that, sorry to interrupt you, but I felt like I did that a lot in my 20s when I was trying to prove myself. When I was trying to do that, I was like gripping on to all the things I really, really, really wanted. And what Rio and going through the pregnancy process really taught me is just that art of allowing. Like, I did everything I could to get the embryos in the right place and all these different things. And then you've got to just trust that it's going to do what it's going to do. And that's also, if it doesn't work out, that's fine. And if it does work out, that's also amazing. Mm-hmm.
And talking of those challenges, your parental order process.
Yes.
That was interesting. So in the process, this is a good example of life, I was frustrated. So basically what happened, I was totally new to this process. There is no handbook on how to do your parental order. All there is the people that have gone before you. So there are so many amazing gay dads who were advising us, who kind of, even there was one gay dad who sent us their documents, what they did for the court. So we literally kind of copied it. But I have no idea about legal language. It completely goes over my head, no experience in it. And anyway, so we had this first hearing, which was online. And basically it was like we turned up to our history class and we had no homework. That's what it felt like with the judge. She was basically telling us off that we hadn't done anything right. And
it wasn't just us.
No,
as well. She didn't have the forms from the...
From the social worker, what we call it, the CAFCAS lady. So there was also a lot of admin errors on their end. But rather than... Because there was a moment I was like, oh, this is terrible. But actually, when I actually looked at ourselves, I was like, we should have put more focus on this process. We should have sought legal advice, which is then what we did.
But we did, but just before we had Rio, I actually spoke to a lawyer and he was like, there's no point in me representing you because actually this is a really simple process. So I don't think you'd really need me to support you in this. So that's why we didn't seek legal advice straight away.
Yeah. But anyway, what ended up happening was we got a lawyer to help us through the process. And then we had thought we'd done everything right. So we'd written these incredible statements, written by the lawyer. Everything was in place. We got on this call. Like, we were even dressed. We were like, this is the day.
We're going to wear all pink.
This day is going to happen. And we got on the line. And it was some really bad admin errors, I think, from the court's part, where the judge was a little bit apologetic. So that I was like, okay, if she's a little bit apologetic, then she's showing signs that not everything is great. And although she, you know, you don't want to really argue with the judge, but we ended up having three court hearings. And again, at the end of the process, what we learned and what the judge said is the reason this is in place is to protect the process, to make sure people aren't
abusing women. Basically.
Abusing women. And we
and
understand.
We understand that, because that was our biggest thing. I just would hate to ever see anyone be abused in this situation. Yeah. But when you see so clearly this is not that kind of situation, yeah, that was when it was a little bit frustrating. Yeah. But
and the goalposts are different for every parent and different for every court. So, for instance, we had a letter from our doctor which said who was the biological father, but then when we got to the court, she was like, I need a DNA test, and no one else had done a DNA test. So what we're hoping is, by again sharing our stories, that we can then help the next set of parents.
And I really want to like help change this law. Like, I really feel like no surrogate in the UK wants to have her and her husband's name and full parental rights over this child. No intended parent wants the same, as you know, wants the same. And so I feel like it would be just such a relief. And if we could get that law changed in the UK, where as soon as the baby's born, the intended parents go on the birth certificate, then I just think everyone would feel so much safer. It wouldn't feel so underground and whatever. I just feel like it would make such a difference. So that's one thing I really am,
I think,
trying to help.
The aftercare for the surrogate is really important after the birth. It's one thing we really wanted to make sure with Sam, that, you know, we really took care of her. We actually even got her some therapy afterwards, because, you know, it's a lot. You've just been through this with your body, and then your body, you know, giving birth, and then it's a lot to take on. But, you know, the last thing they want is, we had to always go through them still. And there was one time, actually, Rio got COVID, which the hospital didn't know at the time. So they thought it was something more serious. And they gave us these forms to sign for something called a lumbar puncture, which we didn't end up doing. But we couldn't actually sign for it because we weren't legally his parents.
Sam would have had to come down from North Wales to London to make that happen.
So it just, the system is just, it's just old. It just needs updating. And it's as with, for our modern time.
With the lack of legal infrastructure, what it means is that it introduces a lot of variation into the system, as you found with your parental order, where parents who did exactly the same thing in another part of the country and with another judge might have had a different outcome first time. And so, but as you say, it doesn't offer the right levels of protection and support that people could have. And I guess, you know, like you said as well, like surrogates, they don't want that. They don't want to keep the baby. And so, but then for them as well, like, they're going through the process, you know, it's stressful for intended parents, but I guess there must be a part in the surrogate's mind going, what if they decide not to take this baby afterwards? I'm left with the baby. And you know, it just doesn't provide the right protection for anyone, I guess. As things stand and with the laws as things are, what advice would you give to other parents who are going through this process now?
If you're doing surrogacy in the UK with someone you don't know, just really make sure you do a lot of getting to know you and making sure it's the right fit for you all, because your emotions are so high during this process. Mm-hmm. And you're even if you're a really calm person, you're going to have a little bit of anxiety about the outcome. And so you just want to make sure that you've got a really strong relationship with your surrogate, that actually it doesn't fall apart, it doesn't break away because of...
Yeah, and I think that's why in America, obviously, the system is so much better, because there's so much in place. But, you know, we recently have had a situation where our second surrogate is... We have a second surrogate that we're hopefully going to go ahead with, and she's going through medical tests. And we worked with the clinic in the USA, and they found some clinics in the UK for her to do the tests. And she ended up going to a GP in London for a physical exam, which is just to tick a box to make sure she's whatever passing that exam. And the GP really challenged her and about whether she should be doing this, not based on her body's right for it, which is not really her job. Her job was to do past the physical exam. And what I can gather from the conversation is she was kind of enforcing her opinions on surrogacy rather than doing her job as a doctor, which was just interesting. But in some ways, I'm glad that happened, because our surrogate came from that situation even more sure that what she was doing was right, because, you know, there are going to be people that are going to, I suppose, going to think differently and not think this is right. And maybe for the surrogate, it could be a family member who maybe don't agree. And we live in a world where we don't always agree, but you just want to make sure they're 100% clear about what the process entails, and for their family, and how their family feels about it too is really important. So
I don't know about you also, but I felt like the whole surrogacy situation is quite underground right now. It's like that you say, okay, I'm gonna have a baby, and then you're like, oh, what do I actually do? And that's why we first went to America, because it just felt much like safer in that way. Whereas like in the UK, it's like, oh, I know someone's had a baby, then you speak to that person, and then okay, they did this, and everything's so different. And so I feel like that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have a bit more of a voice on social media, is because I wanted to be that support for other people. Because when I first decided, okay, we want to be a dad, and there was nothing like right now, there's a few more people popping up, which is just amazing. And I'm just so happy seeing all these gay dads popping up, which is amazing. But at the time when all three of us were going through it, then there wasn't really UK voices on social. So I would have loved to have asked you questions of how you did it and all those kind of things. So that's what I really wanted to do, the social kind of side of this, because I would love to help as many gay couples actually achieve this goal.
Mm-hmm. But with what you're talking about with the GP situation as well, like I guess, like you say, maybe not that person's role to be doing that, but actually that's one of the things that is missing in the UK system, is having someone kind of ask those questions, which, like you say, in America, they will really kind of test those things with someone to help them make sure that it is the right decision for them. And obviously with an unbiased, unopinionated lens on it, but actually that is the kind of thing that needs to be built into the process in the UK, but currently isn't there because of the lack of legislation around this topic.
And the thing is, because we're doing a hybrid system, we have to do all the American ways. So our surrogate does have a sitting with the psychiatrist or whatever to kind of really analyze kind of whether she wants to do this. So kind of we feel protected in that.
But that might happen in the UK too. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
that might still happen in the UK. But we've only done it our own way.
Yeah,
your hybrid way. And what are the values that you want to pass on to Rio?
Kindness. Being kind is one of my... I just feel like I'm a kind person. I feel like Stuart's a really kind person. And just when I look at my parents and how they were with us and continue to be with us, and I've got three brothers, and all my brothers are really kind, caring people. And yeah, I think it's really, really important. You know, they are growing up with a different family, and, you know, they may come across, I don't know, I really hope that Rio grows up in a world where having two gay dads isn't a thing, but, you know, just pay everyone with kindness, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm just really excited to shape him into whoever he wants to be. That, for me, I'm just really excited to kind of like find his unique genius and then really like hone in on that and just run with that, whatever that is. That's one of the things I'm really, really excited about. Because when I was younger, my mum just basically put me in every group, every class, and I was doing all kinds of different things. And then she found out that I love musical theatre, and then she really like honed in on that and helped me achieve that as a career. And I'd love to be able to help Rio do the same, whatever that is.
I also feel like our...
I'd love him to have drive.
I definitely want him to be driven, whatever he wants to do. But I feel like our superpower growing up as a gay kid, but actually this is relevant to everyone because everyone grows up with struggles. But I feel like growing up as a gay kid in the 90s and you know, there was so much we had to overcome and still overcome emotionally. And what this has led to me when I'm 35 now, I really feel like I can understand myself so much more. And what I would just want to be there for him, like really as much as I can. And I just feel like I'm well equipped to help him navigate the world, in through the struggles that I've experienced.
And how, like, because this is something I think about, like what you've just said, in that, you know, I think growing up when you're gay, you realize when you're older, there's quite a lot of trauma that goes with that, particularly when you're like suppressing a part of yourself and aren't able to be who you are. And the whole world is telling you that you can't be something and you've got to kind of overcome that. But like, and then how will it be for these kids who are growing up in these families where, I guess, by virtue of the what we've gone through, we will be a lot more open-minded about whatever, you know, however these kids grow up to be. But you know, that kind of that view, Stuart, you were just talking about empowering them to find that genius in them and what they are, and that, I guess, your perspective on being, having that confidence to be who you are, how do you in practice, what do you do to build that?
That's a really good question. I don't know why, I just naturally, I feel like growing up, my mum always helped me understand that being different, standing out was a good thing. So she really like enforced that in my younger years of like, everyone's wearing this, you don't wear that, you want to wear this. It's much better to be different. So I've always enjoyed also pushing people's boundaries as well. So like Francis' mum and dad, like we went to Gay Pride in Brighton and we were in the gayest outfits ever. And I enjoy going into Francis' parents and saying, look at us in our short shorts and our little crop tops, and him feeling a little bit uncomfortable.
But I mean, they're also they're the most open-minded people as well. So like, but it's just, he just loves pushing their buttons.
Just pushing their buttons.
that's a little bit.
And your mum seems to be a loving life, Francis.
She's loving life.
And his dad is, they're both, what I've learned from Francis' parents, which I definitely want to put into my family, is just like no judgment whatsoever. They could just allow you to be. Yeah.
So my mum and dad are the complete opposite to his mum in some way, which, you know, I would have actually loved maybe a mum that was a little bit more pushy and like go do this. But my parents also let me figure out things on my own. But the one thing they've always had is no judgment. So like, if I had brought a partner home, which I haven't really, because you're the only partner I've really brought home, but it wasn't right, they wouldn't have said, that's not the right person for you. His mum would have. They just don't have judgment. I think because they've been working with Spashanese people for 40 years, they've just learned that it's just part of their being. And I think having no judgment is a really hard thing, because we have all these judgments just kind of built in, but it's something to aspire to. But I think for what you, in answer to your question before, it's just like affirming to that. It's coming back to this word confidence, because confidence seems like such a GCSE kind of drama, like confidence, but so much is built on confidence. And if you can help someone be comfortable in who they are, and comfortable if they feel a bit different, feeling comfortable with their difference, then they're not going to be afraid to go out there and push themselves. And yeah,
and I've never worried what people think. It's so strange. Of course I worry about that. I would hate to upset someone. If I upset someone, I purposely upset them, I would not be able to get over that. It would take me days to get over, because I always want to make sure that everyone leaves me happier than they found me. But like, I, even when I was like a teenager, I used to buy Heat magazine, and I used to go flick through to the Circle of Shame on Heat magazine and look at all these people coming out of nightclubs with cellulite and them circling it. And I used to think to myself, I would just love someone to care enough about me to take a photo of me coming out of a nightclub. Like that must be, although that's a terrible thing for them, I'm sure they're like, oh my God, poor me. But I was just like, I would love that, because that just means that someone cares enough about me to actually post it. So that I've always had that kind of mindset of like, it doesn't matter, as long as I know morally that I'm doing everything in a really good space, and I want to make sure that everyone's happy. If people don't understand that happiness, that's also fine, and it's part of the balance of life, and not everyone's going to understand me. And so how do I teach that? I do not know, but I feel like by teaching Rio to be mega confident and fully own himself and fully realize his full potential, that in turn will enable him not to worry so much what other people think.
Yeah, and an element of life is, you know, is to put your blinkers on a little bit. I think in a world of social media, there's a lot we can all fall to comparison and all those things. And at some point you just have to go, this is what I want to do, I'm going to go for it, and I'm just going to have to...
But yeah, and sorry, we can talk for days on this, because I just love talking about it. But like all the in closing of this question is that when I see, I don't ever compare myself to other people. Like I don't feel like, oh God, I'm frustrated about this person's done this. I get so excited seeing other people succeed because I just know that if other people are doing it, then we can too. And that for me, like whenever I see someone have success, I'm always like the biggest cheerleader because I'm like, that is amazing because you're just showing me that that's possible for me too. If that's something that I wanted to do. Like, so I never have that comparison.
Well, I think that's quite an inspirational place to finish. So thank you so much, both of you. That's been enlightening and I've really enjoyed chatting to you today. And good luck with number two. I'll tell you what, when with number one, because you were about, you know, Rio's about a month younger than Aria, but we were going through the process at similar times. But me and Doug were like watching your YouTube videos every single week because we were kind of, it was nice to almost like, we didn't know you then, but it was nice to almost share that experience with someone going through it at the same time. So I'll be enjoying watching everything you put out on journey number two. So thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
That's it for this week on the Proud Parent Club podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and don't forget there's a new episode every week. So make sure you follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Also, for exclusive previews of next week's show, give us a follow on Instagram and TikTok at the Proud Parent Club. See you next week.